Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. Today, we welcome Mark Sutherland to the show. Mark is the CMO for Missouri Partnership. He is a diplomat, economic developer, entrepreneur, and author. Mark, I am so excited to have you here today. I think you and I met years ago through one of our former state senators.
That's right. Yeah, it's been a while, and it's an honor to be with you today.
Well, I'm glad to have you, and we have a lot to talk about. You've got such an interesting background. It's going to be fun to kind of dive into that a little bit. But talk to me a little bit. Now, you were born in...
So I was born in Scotland, lived there for, a year and a half, and then immigrated to England and actually grew up just outside London. So if you know where London is... You might know where Portsmouth is. So right between there, a town called Farnborough, which is actually the birthplace of British aviation. Grew up there and eventually, in my late teens, immigrated to the U.S., came straight here to St. Louis and absolutely fell in love with St. Louis, with Missouri, and with the U.S., and I've been here ever since.
Well, what precipitated that?
So my parents.
My parents,
they had some really good friends that were coming over here to help with the church. And so my father, who was an engineer, came and worked for an engineering company and also assisted with the church. And then like anybody who's a minister and an engineer, when they come to America, he bought a real estate company because that's what happens in America. Kind of like, all right, that looks fun. Let's go ahead and do that. And then when I got here, I walked into a radio station, asked for a job because I'm like, all right, I've got no skills. I've got no qualifications, but people like the way I talk. And so I started to milk that for my entire career and worked in radio for a number of years and got into PR and marketing after that. Been in America 30 years now.
Well, that explains it because I have said to you, I feel like you've had so many different roles. You've done so many interesting things since you've been in the States. But the common thread through all those is I look at you as a communication strategist.
Yeah. I mean, kind of it's important in any role that you have. You've got to be able to communicate at the level of your audience. You've got to be able to take complex ideas and items and communicate them in a way that not just connects in the mind, but connects in the emotion. Understand how to do that. And it's fun to figure that out in a variety of different ways. And I've worked for nonprofits. I've worked for government service type organizations, multinational agribusiness, agencies where I had multiple clients on a whole slew of topics. I realized very quickly I know nothing about the Cardassians in that role. Never really wanted to. Also got involved in economic development through that role and found absolutely fascinating that there's this entire industry that is focused on creating jobs and investment, and you never hear about them. You hear about the big announcements of some company coming from overseas or somewhere else in the U.S. and opening up facilities. The amount of work that goes behind the scenes on those types of things, but being able to communicate within all those facets. And then, of course, I got involved in government as well and worked with a number of governments over the years to help them reach a U.S. audience. So, yeah, it's been a fascinating experience, 30 years of communicating. And this country's been so good to me. And I'm so grateful for the opportunities I've had.
Well, we're so glad that you're here because you are an important part and have done some really awesome things since you've been here. So you've been both in the private and the public sectors. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I read is that the teams that you've been on, some of the teams you've been on have been recognized with 42 different awards.
I have surrounded myself with really smart people.
Oh, that's smart of you to do that.
No, I mean, and that's kind of key. I mean, any success you have, any award you get, and these are all awards for communication and marketing, it's never an individual. It is always a team effort. You've got to work as a team. You should never care about credit. We never did the work we did to gain an award. It was because it was the right thing to do. It was an effective way to communicate with an audience. It was an effective way to help the organization or the company that you're working with in order to grow their business and grow their success, but it's always with an audience in mind. And I think the reason we got the awards was because we were focused on audience first and how do we effectively reach and connect with those audiences.
That's really great advice. Tell me about the Global Scott role mm-hmm. for the UK. What is that all about?
So that was incredible. So I've worked with the Scottish government probably coming close to 8 or 9 years now. And it just happened. I met them on a trip to Chicago, got invited to a dinner with the First Minister of Scotland back then, and started building a relationship with the various what's called Scottish Affairs Councillors, the senior Scottish diplomat in America. They're based at the UK Embassy in Washington, D.C., and just started helping. Helped them design missions to the U.S., how to connect with companies, how to do a media strategy for the U.S., very different than in the U.K. And in Scotland. And that eventually developed to where they thought I was already a Global Scot. And when they realized that I wasn't, they're like, all right, we need you to be a Global Scot. Now, Global Scots are it's around 400 to 500 business leaders and influencers globally. And the whole goal is to assist Scottish companies overseas, assist them as they expand. So my role is to advise Scottish companies as they look at the U.S., how to evaluate the U.S., how to communicate, a lot of marketing focus on that. But we're basically a group of ambassadors for Scotland, creating opportunities for Scotland on the world scene. And helping Scottish companies and individuals expand on a global basis.
You know, I know that you talk about, and we're going to talk about your book, but you have a new book that has just come out. You talk about how there are cultural differences, there's difference in ideas about how business operates, and it's really important. It's not like you just say, okay, I'm going to do this, right? You have to understand all of those different aspects,
yeah,
right,
and
Mark?
It goes both ways. So the book's Pond Business. It's mm-hmm. specifically written to instruct UK audiences as they look at the US as a potential expansion market and US audiences as they look at the UK and a way to reach Europe and beyond. And yes, you've heard the phrase, two countries divided by a common language. That's just the beginning of the differences. Many people in America look at the UK and think, oh, they just like us. They just talk a wee bit different. Yes and no. They're in a completely different regulatory environment. Social norms are incredibly different. Just the rules and the expectations on going out for a pint. You go out to lunch in the UK, for the most part, they're going to have a pint. You go out after dinner, don't try and keep up as an American. You're going to fail miserably and you're going to embarrass yourself. Regulatory environments, legal environments, and even just within the UK, Scotland, England, they have different legal environments. They have different business environments, different tax structures. So it's very, very different. Mm-hmm. The words mean something different.
Give us some examples.
So you'll hear words like remit. What's your remit? So that's what's your tasking. What's your focus? Or just things like turnover. In the U.S., you think of turnover as okay, employees. What's your employee turnover?
Right.
No, that's profit. How much money are you making every year as a company? So just little nuances like that can completely shift how just a basic conversation goes. And then first floor in the U.K. is different than first floor in the U.S. The ground floor in the U.S. is the first floor.
Yes.
But no, that's the ground floor. The first floor is the U.S. second floor. So just can't even find the office because you're on the first floor and there's no office. so just little things like that.
Right.
And it goes across the gamut on how to do business. And then expectations. So Brits are list driven.
Mm-hmm.
You do a project with the Brits, you're going to have a list of things that you need to do. And you get to the end of that list and you reevaluate and create a new list and you move forward that way. Whereas Americans kind of build the airplane as you've jumped off the cliff. It's an end goal in mind, and we will adjust as we go.
Right.
And so if you're familiar with lean process.
Absolutely.
So lean process, I think, is an American mindset with a British process. It's kind of the combination of the two. It's wanting to be effective. You have a goal in mind. You're going to adjust, but there's a process to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the process shifts. So if you think of that, that's a combination of American and British thinking, but it's very different. And you need to have that understanding going into a business conversation. Otherwise, you're going to get frustrated. And it goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge amount of differences. And then if you're a UK company looking at the US, they look at the US and they look at, all right, so I know New York, I know Florida, all right, maybe the Carolinas, I know California, this is vast, middle that I don't know anything about. But it doesn't matter where I go. I'm just going to go enter the U.S. market, which is absolutely not true. You are setting yourself up for failure,
mm-hmm.
or potential failure at that point. You've got to look at the U.S. as 50 different economies just in Missouri and Illinois. The economies are incredibly different. The regulatory environment is incredibly different. Tax structure, everything that goes into doing business between just you cross a river. Or Kansas City, you've got Kansas and Missouri. You cross mm-hmm. a street and you're in a different environment.
Yes.
And British companies need to know that. And any company coming from around the world need to know that and be able to pick a place that fits their business, that fits their runway, you know, that they can be able to stay in business long enough to have that success. Because there's always a little bit pain at the beginning when you mm-hmm. do an expansion project. And so just understanding that it's going to put you leaps ahead of other companies that are looking at the U.S.
Yeah, and it's all about that thread of being able to communicate
mm-hmm.
so your audience understands where you're coming from and vice versa, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, the U.K. is by far, they say, the largest foreign investor in the U.S., and the U.S. is the largest investor in the U.K., So 1 million Brits work for the United States companies, and in the UK, the vice versa is true.
Correct.
Mark, there are a lot of British-owned Missouri companies,
mm-hmm.
are there not? How many? I think I read it one time.
58, I believe.
58.
Currently investing in Missouri that I'm aware of.
Right.
There's probably more. So AB Mauri would
mm-hmm.
be one.
Mm-hmm.
Their North American headquarters are in the Cortex Innovation community here. In St. Louis, GKN Aerospace,
mm-hmm.
British aerospace company. So GKN North America has 800 employees right next door to Boeing and various others.
Bull Moose
Tubes.
So a client of ours. And
Lord
I know
Paul is
mm-hmm.
a good friend. He actually wrote the foreword in the book. He's a member of the House of Lords. He's been investing in Missouri since the 1970s. If you're familiar with the new Angard Arts Hotel, that
yes.
was developed by him and Steve Smith, who's an incredible developer here in the St. Louis region. And it's named after his son. He's an active investor in the state, and he's an investor everywhere. He has
mm-hmm.
a lovely restaurant in London called Christopher's, which I highly recommend.
Okay, if anyone's going to London,
if you're
check
over
it
there.
Out.
And there's a whole chapter in my book on if you're visiting London, where to go. And I
right.
mentioned Christopher's in there as well.
Good.
But yeah, just a phenomenal connection. Missouri is a priority state for the United Kingdom. One of only 10 in the U.S. The reason being is there's a lot of similarities. So the U.K., like Missouri, is a global ag tech leader, agritech, as they call it, in the U.K. Health innovation is a key aspect of the British economy, as it is here in Missouri, both on the research and on the data side of things. Battery technology is an energy usage is a key priority for the United Kingdom. And we've got companies like Eagle Picture down in Joplin, although the headquarters are here in St. Louis. The International Space Station is powered by Missouri batteries. A majority of defense products are powered by Missouri batteries. The Mars missions, every single one has been powered by Missouri batteries. So Missouri is a global leader in energy storage, and nobody knows it. We're promoting that. But there's a lot of commonalities between the UK and Missouri when it comes to industry. And so really building on that, finding the connection points, finding the growth opportunities that are of benefit to both is huge. And there's a whole slew of Missouri companies invested in the UK as well, Enterprise Holdings, Emerson, Express Scripts, various others that are active over there.
Well, I want to continue digging into that. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with Mark Sutherland. Let's face it, the future is mobile. There's a good chance that you are listening to this show right now on your phone. Have you explored how you can move your business mobile too? Our mobile apps team at Technology Partners makes it their mission to move our clients into the hands of their employees and customers and change their business processes to meet the demands of their users. Let's work together and build a dynamic mobile app for your team. Go to tpi.co/mobile apps and get the conversation started about how we can help you get your new application off the ground. So, Mark, I know now that you've got a couple of different titles.
just a few.
One is the British Honorary Consul.
Correct.
So I want you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So full title, Her Majesty's Honorary Consul of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. So try fitting that on a business card.
Yes.
My specific tasking basically is representing Her Majesty's government across the state of Missouri. Whatever form that takes. That moves from ambassadorial visits or ministerial visits. We just had the Red Arrows here a few weeks back, hosted 150 Brits from, you know, the Red Arrows, from Her Majesty's Armed Forces, from the embassy in D.C., from the consulate in Chicago, from London, and just really facilitated a whole bunch of meetings, roundtables, events in order to build those connections. With Missouri being a priority state, it was important that we took advantage of the Red Arrows tour of America and North America and really leverage that to really raise the visibility even more than we have. So it goes from things like that all the way down to, hey, we need a box delivered to the conference center. So I'm a facilitator in the role, and I get to do diplomacy. I get to work with companies, British companies and American companies looking at the UK and really try and make it successful here in Missouri for the United Kingdom in a way that benefits both Missouri and the UK.
Okay. Well, let's talk about then, you also have the title of CMO. You are the Chief Marketing Officer for the Missouri Partnership.
Correct.
For our listeners that really aren't familiar with what is the Missouri Partnership, where does Missouri rank? You said before that there were 10 different states that the UK is being invested in and keeping their eye on. Where do we rank?
Yeah, I mean, it's specific numbers. We're in the top, but the opportunities are what's key. So the commonalities between the two. My job as CMO at Missouri Partnership is basically to brag about Missouri globally, not just to the UK, but all over the world, digitally, in person, at events, and really raise the awareness that Missouri is a top business destination for companies elsewhere in the US that are looking to expand, but also coming to North America for the first time. We have a lot of companies, South America, Europe, Israel. Their North American headquarters end up being in Missouri for many, many reasons. You know, just center of the country, ability to get your goods and products anywhere in North America and beyond, thanks to Class One railroads going all the way down to, you know, deep water ports in Mexico, the Mississippi. The Panama Canal expansion is going to create even more opportunity for the Mississippi. As far as goods and products, the talent that's available.
Universities.
Yeah, universities, the resources. There's many, many reasons for companies to look at Missouri, but especially internationally, there's not an awareness of why.
Mm-hmm.
And so my job is to create that awareness and to create the realization that there are opportunities in Missouri that will position a company or corporate expansion in a very positive way to where they can be competitive and grow and, in Missouri, create jobs and create investment.
So how do you go about doing that? What are some of the tactics that you are using? Do you go visit these companies that are considering coming to the U.S.?
Many, many tactics. Really comes back to where we started, which is communicating effectively to the right audience. So identifying the audience and then figuring out, how do I connect with that person or that company? Could be digital. Could be what's called geofencing, whereas I draw a digital circle around their headquarters and start delivering ad content to them via either their IP address or through mobile technology. Could be attending an event, identifying the growth companies that are in attendance and scheduling meetings with them and having conversations. Depending on the industry, the messaging is very different. There is no standard message for why Missouri is advantageous. If you're financial services, your messaging is going to be very different, very accurate, but very different from a manufacturing company or a logistics company or a health innovation company. Missouri has both the advantage and the disadvantage of being one of the more economically diverse states in the country. It means that my messaging has to be very different for each industry, but it also means we're a lot more stable. If you notice with the ups and downs of the U.S. economy, Missouri has its ups and downs, but they're less severe. We still follow the national trends, but not to the same degree. Steady growth, slow decline when the U.S. are doing the same, because we're very diverse as a state. We have incredible talent, and we're really doing some things recently that that helps take care of even more talent needs. You know, there's no state, there's no city in the country, actually, there's no country in the world, I think, is not having talent issues of some kind. So everybody's competing on that front.
Yes.
And Missouri's done some great things very recently to really step up our value proposition on the talent side of things.
Well, that is a perfect segue. So talk to us about Missouri One Start.
Yeah, so Missouri One Start's a phenomenal program. We've been trying to figure out over the last number of years, or at least really smart people in state government and the colleges around the state are figuring out how can we meet the talent needs of the companies that are here and also the companies that we're attracting to come here, invest, and create jobs. And so Missouri One Start is basically a one-stop shop of customized training through a connected network of colleges and training centers across Missouri. We've always had these elements, but it's been you need to go talk to this person for this and this person for this and then this person for this. This is you talk to one person and they figure out the solutions for you. It's a solution-driven, customer-centric mindset in state government. It was one of the priorities for Governor Parson in this past year. It's a phenomenal tool to have. It leaps us ahead of states like Alabama and Louisiana and Kentucky when it comes to workforce solutions. And that's absolutely key. In economic development, the two initial questions are workforce and location. Do you have the site or the facility that meets my corporate needs? And can you fill the talent pipeline that I'm going to have?
Exactly. So
and
important.
So we're really focused on answering those. And the governor's given us the tools that we can use to really up the game. Missouri's always had a great game, always been on the field in a very competitive way. This increases our competitiveness with companies that are looking at the state.
So Missouri One Start sounds amazing. I love the one-stop shop, one person that you can talk to help you navigate. But this is for citizens that are already employed and maybe they're wanting to skill up or possibly they're wanting to make a lateral move into a completely different industry. You know, that is the focus, is the citizen, the
Correct.
Missouri citizen.
Yeah, so the avenue is through the company. So say a company has some upskilling needs, then they would talk to Missouri One Start, figure out what that looks like, leverage the resources from the training centers, community colleges statewide, and get them the training that they need in order to grow. If it's a company that we are attracting to the state, it takes, you know, a year, 9 months, year and a half to build the new facility. So during that time, making sure the training programs are in place, the local colleges and training centers are training towards the roles that the company is going to need. A prime example of that is in St. Louis, Boeing's pre-employment training. So, you know, they identify people with aptitude. They go through this training program prior to even being offered a job at Boeing. And then a huge majority of them get a job at Boeing afterwards. But they're trained, ready to walk day one through the door, ready to go and work for the company rather than being hired and then having to be trained after the fact.
Right. Wow, that just sounds great. So you are talking to the company. You are communicating with them about what it is that they need. Then you guys are coming up with the solution.
That's
you said you're solution-driven.
Yeah, very solution-driven. It's definitely a partnership model. So, you know, Missouri One Start's managed by the Missouri Department of Economic Development, and they would be the key point of contact. And then they reach out across the state to figure out the solutions and find the answers and work in conjunction with us. If it's an attraction project, Missouri Partnership will be very involved. But yeah, it starts with listening. It starts with understanding the company, their needs, what their challenges are. And really, that's economic development at its core.
It is
listening to a company, whether they're here or whether they're moving here or thinking about moving here, and figuring out answers to their problems and figuring out ways that you can help them grow, help them be successful. Because ultimately, that means more jobs for Missourians, more investment in the state, more growth, and then more opportunity down the road.
Win, win, win.
Yeah, exactly.
All the way around. Well, do you have any predictions on what's going to happen with Brexit, Mark?
So, I mean,
where's your crystal ball?
My crystal ball is, regardless of what happens, the opportunities between the UK and the US are phenomenal. Those will not change. Now, there may be different formats to that. There may be different process. If we're talking about a UK-US free trade agreement, that'll create even more opportunity. But no, the relationship between the two countries is strong and will be stronger. Currently, the Prime Minister is committed to October 31st as Brexit Day. They're in solid negotiations with the EU as to what that looks like. There are some sticking points that they're working through. There's a whole political process going on as well. It's It's rather entertaining to watch sometimes. I'm a huge fan of Prime Minister Question Times in the UK. I think we need a little bit more of that over here. Just the rancor and the fun and the hard questions and just that environment. But yeah, it's a process. And the Prime Minister is focused on Brexit. That's his commitment. And we're kind of watching that happen in real time. But regardless, the UK-US relationship will be strong and will be stronger.
Well, it'll be interesting, right?
It definitely is interesting.
The next 35 days or so. So, Mark, I have to ask you, have you met the Queen?
Almost.
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 Okay.
So, back in November, actually, just this past November, my wife and I were in the UK. I had a couple of days where I could do the tourist stuff. I was there for business, but did a couple of days of tourist stuff, and we went to Windsor Castle on a Friday, did the tour. I highly recommend visiting Windsor Castle and taking the audio tour and even doing some of the private tours. Just phenomenal history. I think it's been lived in by the reigning monarch for 1,000 years. So it's one of the longest occupied homes of a monarchy in the world. So we did the tour. When you get to the end of the tour, you walk out, and you're right next to what's called the Queen's Courtyard. It's where the Queen welcomes guests, sends off guests. Didn't quite realize what I was looking at the time. I'd noticed there was a car parked in the courtyard earlier because you could see out of the window, and it had some Austrian license plates. I'm like, oh, some ambassador's here doing something or other. And so we walk out, and as we're standing next to this fence, just 100 feet away, 150 feet away, is what's called the Queen's Entrance. And I learned all this after the fact. It's Queen's Entrance, and that's where the Queen, you know, welcomes and shows our guests. And I didn't know this, so I'm watching, and four people walk out. Two guys in a business suit, a tall gentleman in a military uniform, and a short lady in a blue dress. I'm like, oh, okay, what's going on over there? And they shake hands, and the people walk down to the car, get in the car, and drive off, and the two people on the steps are waving. And I'm thinking to myself as I stand there, who is important enough to show out guests at Windsor Castle? And it hits me. I recognize that blue dress.
You missed it.
It's Her Majesty.
Yes.
And she's showing out a couple of guests, probably from Austria. I'm not sure who the taller gentleman was. He didn't look from a distance like the Duke of Edinburgh, but one of her senior military advisors. And then she turned around and walked back in. And I'm like, wow, that's Her Majesty. And I was that close.
You were very close.
So one day I do hope to meet her. I've held her in high regard for so many years. She is a phenomenal example of a public servant, a lifetime of choice to choose to serve. She's advised people from starting with Winston Churchill up to our current prime minister. I mean, that's some amazing historical information. And then I highly recommend if you're into the monarchy, there's a book by Sally Bettles Smith called The Queen. Read that book.
The Queen.
The Queen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
incredibly
good.
Well written. It's a biography of her and give you some insights into the kind of individual she is.
I will download it today. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, this is something extra. So talk to me about maybe one of your team members or somebody that you've worked with, and what was their something extra?
Actually be an entire team. It's the team up in Chicago at the UK consulate. People look at government service and they really don't know what people do a lot. They just know they're doing something. These individuals are both Americans and British, committed to strengthening the UK-US connection and relationship in many forms and facets, and they work their rear ends off. They work weekends. I get emails late at night from members of the team. They travel all over. So the consulate in Chicago covers 14 states. And they're traveling all over, meeting with companies, meeting with officials, driving this forward, and nobody knows it. They just do their work. They do it incredibly well. They are a shining example of a representation of the UK and the US. And I cannot rave about them enough. It's an honor to work with them and to be a part of that team. But yeah, they do so much work and nobody knows
it. And nobody even knows it.
You know, it's like a lot of organizations like that. They do a lot of stuff behind the scenes. People see the big announcements. They think it just happens. No, it takes a lot of work.
A lot of work behind the scenes, yes. Well, I had the honor about a month or so ago to meet a lot of them. And the passion, the energy that they brought to the table was just amazing. So,
very much.
That's great. Well, what do you believe, Mark, is the something extra that every leader needs?
I always go back to the debrief. So you do an event, you do a meeting, you do a project, you do a campaign, and you have got to be comfortable. If you're going to lead, you've got to be comfortable just sitting down and putting everything on the table. There's no CYA. There's no, you know, I'm going to protect my reputation. It's you need to improve. You need to be in a constant state of improvement. And the other people on your team need to also be comfortable in that environment. And there's going to be things you did right. Mm-hmm. There's going to be things you hit out of the ballpark, to use an American colloquialism. I'm not sure what the British one is for that one. It's been a while. But you've got to be comfortable putting it on the table and then also realizing there's room for improvement. And there's probably some mistakes in there.
Yes.
And you've got to be willing to own that and move forward as a team, as a leader, in order to deliver even better next time. And the next time you do it again. You've got to be comfortable with that if you're going to be able to lead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm reminded when the Red Arrows were here, they talk a lot about that. And I've heard the Blue Angels talk about that.
Yeah.
There's always that debrief, right? You plan,
correct,
you execute, you debrief.
Correct.
And in the debrief, it's not all unicorns and rainbows.
It better not be.
It better not be.
You know,
right?
If you did it all right, you're missing something.
Right.
There's always something that can,
yes,
be improved, no matter how minor. And you should always be focused on that improvement.
Great words of advice. It doesn't matter what you're doing, whether,
exactly,
it's something in your family or, like you said, a project, a meeting, anything. So great words of advice. Mark, is there anything that you want our listening audience to know about? I'm thinking in particular your latest book. You are an author. You've got so many different things that you've done.
I enjoy writing. It came out of probably a few years. I have a blog that I write, and eventually I'm like, all right, I need to put all these conversations and all these blog posts and all these ideas and I need to put it down in book form. And then ended up talking to an incredible amount of really smart people in government, in business, who are working between the UK and the US. They've either expanded one way or the other successfully, or they're supporting companies and organizations that do that. Put it all down in one book. The original premise of the book is two countries divided by a common language, but then it goes on from there.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's 150 pages, so an easy read. But you'll hopefully walk out of reading the book and realize a lot of things that you might have assumed are actually not true about our two countries, but there's a huge amount of opportunity. And that's really the goal. And then, you know, of course, it's essential to build the right team around any kind of expansion project, whatever direction it is. But yeah, I do encourage people to pick up the book.
And the title of the book is Pawn Business.
How to Succeed Across the Atlantic, really specific to US, UK expansions. And it's available on Amazon, bookstores,
yes,
UK, US.
Kindle. I have it on
Kindle.
My Kindle.
Yep. Any way you want to get books, you can get the book.
Very good. Well, I would encourage everyone to go out and purchase, because I know that if you've enjoyed this conversation, I guarantee you, you're going to enjoy this book and reading this book.
Thank
so,
you.
Mark, thank you so much for being here.
Absolute
it has
pleasure.
Just been a joy. It's been so much fun.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.